Before we get started with today's podcast, we'd like to ask returning listeners to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast platform, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, share a link to this podcast with friends or family who would enjoy hearing our weekly discussions about basketball and basketball culture. Now, on to the show.
Yeah, isn't it amazing when Michigan can keep this game to a 19-foot, 9-inch game inside that three-point line? It's all there. Nice move by Steve Fisher here.
Welcome to the 19-9 podcast. I'm Aaron Meyer. My co-host today is Josh Barnett, one of the owners of 19-9. Our guests today are helping us dive into basketball apparel culture and sneaker culture. We've got Nick DiPaola, former editor-in-chief and creative director at Soul Collector Magazine and now at ESPN as an NBA feature writer, and Ian Stonebrook from Okanis, Michigan, based in Austin, Texas. After starting his journalism career with Nice Kicks, he's gone on to write for the likes of Jordan Brand, Complex, GOAT, Soul Savvy, Cali Barbecue, Asics, and many more. Let's head it to Josh to kick things off here to get these guys some questions.
I'm just trying to figure out why Ian didn't list 99 as a client. What's up with that?
I was like, well, because if I didn't say many more, I was like, well, I guess it's really only one more.
You were the only ones who got left off?
It hasn't been published yet, to my knowledge. Yeah, I got to see. You got to send the link or the check, you know, one of the two.
Okay.
The plug.
Get on the list. You'll get the link first, probably.
Maybe the check.
All right.
No, it's funny that you should say that though, because when we get this pod up and running, that's going to be the day that we launch the at least a couple of the first six that you wrote for us. So greatly appreciated, and on that front, and greatly appreciate you guys joining us too.
Thank you guys.
So before we kind of get into college basketball and the sneakers that belong in the college basketball heaven, in this hardwood heaven that we've created, this basketball utopia, I first want to talk to you guys about the first pair of kicks that you got, that you remember, basketball kicks that you remember. What age were you? What were they? What made them special? What do you remember about them? And were you kind of hooked when you first got them, or was it just kind of like, oh, this is a basketball shoe? I'll toss it to Ian first, and then Nick, we'll come back to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first pair of shoes for me was definitely Reebok Shaq Gnosis. My mom and a sister, and probably my mama, we're on a shopping trip in Crawfordsville, Indiana, and they returned with them, but they didn't tell me they got them. So my sister started opening them up like they were hers, and I knew they were for me. And yeah, I've been pretty much hooked ever since. And I was probably 8 years old, heading into third grade. Yeah.
Wait, did the Shaq Gnosis have the C2 cartridge?
No. So the Shaq Gnosis was like a Hexalite base, if you will, but kind of like the Zebra striped upper.
Yep.
Yeah. So I thought it was going to be the birth of my basketball career, but I found since that I'm more of a multimedia. Hyphenate, like Shaquille.
It's funny because back then DJ. Big men could sell shoes. So I remember having the David Robinson 180 pumps. And here I was like when I was 10, and I was this little like 5'4 skinny ass little white dude out there with shoes that went up halfway to my knees, you know, and it's like, well, these were actually built for the most athletic 7-foot dude in the world. And here I am like trying to drag my legs around carrying these things up and down up and down the court. So
height 4'4, shoe height 4'4.
I'm gonna need a fact check. Is Josh no longer 5'4"? I don't.
Just a little bit bigger. It's fatter though. That's the depressing part.
Hey, you and me both.
How about you, Nick?
My first CD was Shaq Diesel.
Oh,
yes.
Which I still have.
Nice.
Such amazing lines as a tisket, a tasket, I'll rip down the basket. So, amazing. And then I have an original Shaq Gnosis here.
Oh, no.
Obviously goes with, and then like some Shaq figures as well too. But my first, the first shoe I noticed was the Zoom Flight 95. I was 10 on like a school field trip, and I just thought like, wow, this is the most crazy futuristic design ever, an amazing shoe. And Jason Kidd was one of my favorite players and all that. And then they were $110, and I had a $40 budget, so that wasn't going to work with my mom. So I ended up getting the Thrill Flight, which was the takedown version, for $58 at JCPenney. I had to chip in 18 bucks. And it was the black, white, gold color. And that was actually the colorway that Mitch Richmond wore. And that was one of my favorite players on the Kings, of course. So that was my cool way of justifying it, that it was like, I couldn't get the J. Kidd shoe, but I could get the Mitch Richmond shoe. And so that was really fun and cool. And so I wore those like literally through the toe, like the whole forefoot had no rubber on the bottom anymore. The whole heel was like worn through. The airbag actually was like exposed in the heel from how much I wore them out. And that I still search on eBay for a pair this day. Obviously, it's a stupid search because I'm not going to find a pair. But that was always my favorite shoe growing up and my first one. And then the Zoom Flights was like the shoe once I got to college that I went back and bought a bunch of pairs of.
Nice.
Yeah, that kind of leads me into the next question of the pair that got away. So like as kids, I remember growing up and, when I first started getting into basketball, my mom took me to, our mall here, Eastland Mall, and Derner's was the spot. And we were trying to get the military blue Jordan 4s because I saw a kid that was really good at basketball camp that was wearing them. And I really didn't know what I was doing basketball wise, but I was like, mom, I don't know shit about this, but I do know that that pair of shoes is dope. Like I need these. And she's like, yeah, it's no problem. We can go get them. She didn't know anything about shoes. Well, those things have been sold out for like months, you know? So there was no like, there was no finding them. There was no eBay, internet, GOAT, StockX, none of that stuff, you know, back then. So that was always the shoe that got away. So as soon as those were retroed, I had to jump out and get a pair. Is there a pair, Ian, that got away from you that you always have a special place for? Anytime at retros, you want to try to come back and scoop a pair just based on nostalgia?
You know, I don't know if there's any shoe that I would like rebuy each time, just because I think once I relive the memory once, I'm pretty much good. But the Composite One is definitely the shoe that comes to mind. I mean, you know, while I was blessed with a mom who liked clothes as much or more than I did, and a dad who liked sports, you know, as much or more, I pretty much always had a good pair of shoes. But 180s.
Did you have foams as a kid or no?
That's the thing. So I couldn't get the Foamposite One because 180 for a, you know, 10-year-old foot wasn't happening.
That's a deal now.
Yeah, I did have the Penny Threes, the liquid foams after, and I had the Duncan foams, the Total Max Foamposite.
I like that 180 was like the stratosphere that you couldn't touch, but then they got the $170.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they're on sale, you know? They're on, is you know, sale or a whatchamacallit, lawn mowing, or just, you know, maybe revisionist history that I actually was that spoiled. It's hard to say, but
that's 100% it. So like, if you would have answered yes, that you had the Foamposite ones at 180 as a kid, it immediately labels you as a spoiled child. Like there's no gray area there.
Yeah, it's indefensible.
Do you guys remember the Tim Duncan commercial where he's got his foams? He's like going through and like blocking everything. He like knocks something off the marquee, and he like, there's like a little girl, he like knocks the sucker out of her hand. It's pretty sweet. We'll have to put a link in it in the show notes, but it's hilarious to watch just Tim Duncan try, because he's got that perfect like flat affect, just knocking stuff out of people's hands.
The only Duncan commercial I remember is like him and Kobe rapping for Sprite. That one always stood out to me.
He had a funny one with D Rose. I want to say it was with, or maybe it wasn't. I don't know if it was with D Rose, but it was like that Foot Locker one where he's like,
oh yeah,
like your monotone. That was pretty good
too. Yep.
That was more recent. That was like 2013 or so.
Well, one of the joys of living in Central Texas is the San Antonio Spurs are often the spokesman for the HEB grocery store commercials, which Duncan actually really flexed his acting chops in, and was quite good.
Yeah. Classics.
You get those Spurs personalities of Duncan and Kawhi and David Robinson, but you can do a lot around those personalities for sure. It's just funny as hell.
Less is more sometimes. Hey, absolutely. Piggybacking off what Josh said, has the industry boomed because of this kind of sellout culture where you can't get anything and it ends up on StockX or GOAT, or is it a bubble? Cause I don't know. Like, it seems like when I look on there now, it'll be a little above retail, but maybe not way above. And I'm thinking, like, I don't understand the strategy, I guess, anymore. And that's just maybe my naivete, but I'm like, I could get this for retail, and then they're reselling it for like $20 more. Like, what's the gig here? Or is it like just everybody's in right now and eventually it's going to blow up?
I mean, I feel like for 20 years, sneakers have been hard to get in terms of like the stuff you really are trying to track down. I mean, there's always different methods of what makes it hard to get them, whether that's like sleeping on concrete and missing out in the 2000s or like sneakers app now. But there's always like these 4 or 5 year shifts of sneakers being hard to get in a different way. And I think now with social media, it's like that much more immediate that you are hearing from other people that didn't get them. And that's probably like what makes it seem like it's so hard to get. But I always joke, like, I'm like, they've been hard to get for 20 years. Like, whether that was Cool Grey 11s in 2001 or whatever just released on sneakers last week, like, it's been like a chase that Nike's been making everybody go on for a long time.
That's fair. Ian, you said something earlier that you only buy that one time around to kind of scratch that nostalgia itch. Which brings me, is perfectly in line with my next question to you guys, of, is there a generation coming behind us that retros appeal to, or that nostalgia play appeals to? Like, for me, my analogy was the Jordan 4 Military Blue 4s, and I'll try to grab a pair when they come available just because it was a pair that I missed out on when I was a kid. Now I have my own money and I can get them. Is that next generation below ours? Do they have similar stories to that, or did they grow up on just retros? Like, can that shoe buying demographic just continue to replace itself on the current model? Your opinion?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, it's weird because, well, it's really not weird, I guess, because obviously, you know, all of us can speak to retro Jordans that came out when we were in high school, middle school, whatever age that we were maybe too young to have really grown up with, or like, you know, been actively watching at that time, that meant something to us in, say, like 1999, you know, 03, whenever, and we would chase later on. So I do think there's, you know, 25-year-old kids per se that are like, man, I missed on the black and red ones, and, you know, give or take which year, you know, like whether it was the 2011 drop or I'm blanking if it was 2016 when they came back next, that has that same attachment. And then I think the flip side is they probably look at LeBron's and KD's and Kyrie's the same way we do Jordan's and Penny's. Maybe not with quite the same reverence because there's not like the pun intended commercial appeal, you know, like all the storytelling is through the colorways, not as much through the advertising campaigns. But yeah, I think it'll, unless something just, you know, really disruptive happens, yeah, I think there's still going to be that appetite. But it is weird now that, like, not getting shoes isn't because you couldn't afford it at Foot Locker, you know, or you hadn't mown enough lawns, or, you know, your mom's wasn't about it. It's like, no, these Air Maxes that have whatever funky story, you know, real or arbitrary, sold out on sneakers, and I couldn't afford them for three times more on StockX. So if I'm curious to see with this next generation, Aaron kind of like, you know, put point to it, is like, if your relationship with sneakers is straight up not getting them off the sneakers app, is that like this insatiable hunger when you're older? Or is it like, oh, I was, in turn, now I'm just a vegetarian. You know, I've never had bacon. So like, whatever, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, I think in a lot of ways, it's definitely just disenfranchising a lot of people. Like, I always joke, the last shoe I got on sneakers was 2016. It was the gray and red Spiridons, which I doubt even many people were going for. And every time I've tried since, it's been an L. So I think there's a lot of people that just, like, you just keep trying and you just at some point give up. Like, our friend Trey just finally, he's like, today was a big day for me. He's like, I took a big step. I deleted the sneakers app on my phone. You know? It was like an actual, like, important life moment, but that was, like, to him a big deal.
It just takes that one, though, to get you right back in. You know, you get that, you hit on that one, you're like, oh, man.
he started, like, wearing mules and Birkenstock. He went the whole different way. I think a big piece of it is, you know, like, when Ian and I were growing up, we didn't care at all. Magic and Dr. J and Bird, like, everything for us was exciting about who was coming up and whether that was KG or Penny or J Kid or all these other new guys. And I think, you know, I never try to be the guy that's like to get off my lawn or like these kids today don't appreciate the past. Like, cause we didn't either. Like, I think that's the fun of it. So I would say for so many kids, it's all about different colorways and whether that's SpongeBob or different themes that Kyrie is coming up with, you know, different stuff LeBron's doing or even like some of the Kobe stuff versus, they don't really have an appreciation for 90s basketball, and I don't really fault them for that. Like, I think there's a lot of shoes that, whether that's the Ultraflight or even like the Hyperflights behind me, like there's shoes that I would post or that I think are the coolest things. And like kids now, like having a full patent leather or a bright colored shoe, like that doesn't impress them, you know? And so there's so many things from our era that were unique and different and at that time exciting, that nowadays a kid is like, that shoe has no technology. Like, it's just one color. Like, that thing's trash, you know? And they're just
I had a proud dad moment a couple weeks ago. I was coaching my son, my 8-year-old son, Knox, and there's a timeout. We're getting our asses beat, right? And there's a timeout pretty early in the game. And we get in the huddle, and I'm wearing the Fear of God Raids, black Raids. And so we're sitting there, and the coach is – I'm just an assistant coach, so the coach is getting on to him. We got to do this. We got to do that. Knox is kind of huddled down by me, and he looks down at my shoes, and he looks back up, and he's like, hey, Dad, I like those shoes. I'm like, yep, I appreciate that, buddy, but now's not the time for that. Like, we got to get on the boards.
We need to get down defensive stance.
Let's focus there. but, yeah, it is funny kind of like passing that down now as a dad too, and my son's starting to get a little bit more into it, but he doesn't care about any of the nostalgia of it. You know, he just kind of likes what his dad likes for right now.
Well, we talked a little bit about the past and the present. Then I'll throw it to Ian first. What do you think the future of the sneaker industry looks like? And what's, you know, is there one out there that's going to be like a future retro that people are sleeping on right now, maybe, that you think in years to come will generate that nostalgia?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I definitely like to see stuff come back to really more performance and innovation, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard that. And like I said, like for me, a lot of the nostalgia itch has been like, I admit it's damn near a scar now. You know what I mean? I have more stuff than I ever need, you know, like I'm still going to bust you guys up for probably some new basketball shorts that are like pair of 70 and 71 for me. You know what I mean? But I do think that I look at it more as like, I would like to see it become that way because I want to see kids and people in general doing stuff. You know, obviously the last year sucked with, you know, having to be outdoors, but I think we've all kind of realized like, well, shoot, like if all I'm going to wear these shoes for is to get an outfit off, like kind of weak, you know what I mean? So I would like to see footwear, you know, even with like, you know, skate, you know, SB Dunks being popular, like hopefully people try skateboarding now, you know what I mean? Yeah. I am past the point in paying for my own health insurance. Well, I'll be getting back on a skateboard anytime soon, but you know, for the younger and more rubber people for sure. But I do think that, I do think that retro LeBrons will be a thing. I do think the KD4 will have an amazing retro run. I think, you know, sadly because of the passing of Kobe, I think his stuff is going to be very relevant on court for a long time. It'll be interesting to see if it transitions to off court, you know, wear ship, which regardless, I just hope it gets warm. You know what I mean? Obviously for basketball first, because you know, that's what the line was truly about. But I think, you know, I was talking when I was on this sneaker history stuff with like Nick Engvall and Russ and Gotti and Retro Kid and Brett, like, I think people do forget that, like, when Penny Retros first came back, and Jordan Retros for that matter too, they didn't set the world on fire, you know? Nope. Like, the first round, you know, Jordan's 94, Penny's like around 04, were pretty lukewarm. And then Jordan's in the mid-2000s, and then Penny's in the late 2000s, early 2010s, caught fire. So I feel the same thing will happen with LeBron.
Nick, I specifically had a question about the future of the sneaker industry for you. Do you see the future of the industry going more, staying more in the retros and how it is now? Or do you see that skewing more towards collabs? I know that collabs are like on fire right now in some of the most sought after sneakers. And some of that has to do with the limited availability, et cetera. And some of it has to do with the brands that are behind them, too, just having like a cult following. I'm big on the collabs because I think it's just cool and fun. I was just going to kind of get your take on that and how the industry is skewing.
I think it'll be collabs of retros, right? So I think that's going to be the formula, which has been the formula for probably 15, 20 years, but I still see that going, whether that's, you know, LeBron, KD, other models that become retros, they're always still going to filter it through that kind of like energy lens with different people collaborating and different people coming into the mix. But I think the thing that I would like to see is, and I felt like the Kobe line could have really done this and obviously hasn't, but I don't think that everything has to come back exactly how it was, mm-hmm. whether that's doing a Flyknit version of the KD4 or a Flyknit version of the Kobe 5. Like, I feel like you could modernize stuff and do it in a fun way. And Jordans, obviously, people appreciate most in their like true one-to-one form as close to the retro as you can be or as close to the original as you can be. But I think for a lot of the other stuff, all the 2000s and on shoes, like they're not going to look like a old school retro basketball shoe because all the stuff from 2000 on was still really futuristic and modern. So I don't think they should try to treat it like it's this historical like retro sneaker when a lot of that stuff still, you know, works and lives alongside a lot of the modern stuff today. So I think they could actually update the materials to a lot of that stuff and that would give it a new kind of spin. And even though KD4s came out 10 years ago, like Nerf and some of the most coveted colorways, like a lot of people still have those in good shape. Like, it's not like it's Jordan 4s where your original pair was like crumbling and you couldn't actually
yeah.
wear them.
Yeah.
People that like 84s, they like Ian, I'm sure, can just like dip back and just grab a pair from 10 years ago and still wear them, you know? So I think how they modernize them and how they like reintroduce them to the current kids, like that's probably like the piece that Nike could have a little more fun with versus just bringing it back the same way it used to be.
Yeah, to your point, that's how I keep my sneakers hidden from my wife. Is like all of them look like they're brand new. So if I pull a new pair out and I wear them, she's like, "Hey, is that a new pair?" Like, girl, I've had these for 10 years. I just got them in the mail yesterday.
He has them all shipped to headquarters now that he's got the headquarters address.
Exactly. Yeah, we have a lot of excess overflow down here.
I know we all, or I can at least speak for myself. And, you know, Nick, to a degree, and I'd assume you guys too, like when Nike did the, the remix, what was like when they did like the Sharply and like the Alpha?
Oh, yeah.
The refresh stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, the refresh. Thank you. I knew it was a re something. Like some of that stuff was pretty good and well received. And I mean, maybe there's a world where like, you know, the Nets, you know, win back-to-back championships and like, sure, we'd like a proper or upgraded KD4 or Kyrie 2 retro, but like maybe a hybrid basketball shoe with like Kyrie and KD DNA like does really well with the kids that are going to be 20 then. I don't know.
Man, you're going to like my KD interview that comes out in a couple weeks because that was like his – I was asking him would they want to do a pack together, and he was like, I kind of would rather just do a hybrid shoe together.
Oh, nice. That would be cool.
Well, in terms of retro collaboration, we obviously need the 19.9 times Air Jordan 19 and Air Jordan 9.
Oh yeah, that's just right around the corner.
We Josh just got in slammed. Don't make his head any bigger.
No big heads down here.
So the other thing that's like quote unquote the future that I still can't get on board with is this whole like NFT digital moment thing that's taking place right now.
Don't understand it.
My whole thing with sneakers is I like to like, you know, wear them, and that's like what a novel concept. But there's now you have like Gucci last week that had a $12 digital NFT sneaker.
Yeah,
there's other brands looking into that space, and like
I'm sure that's coming.
I don't know how many colors of Off-White Jordan 1s have come out. What is it, like four maybe? If there's like a fifth like exclusive Off-White Jordan color that you can only buy like the digital version of to show off in your digital closet, like to us, that probably sounds ridiculous and makes no sense, but like people would probably pay $1,000 for that. So it's nuts.
I'm actually going to try to sell the screenshot of this pod that we're doing right now as an NFT for a couple million. But
I have a buddy who's an agent, and he was like, I have a one of one moment photo of Ja Morant on a jet ski in Miami. How much is that worth? And I was like, I don't think that's how this works. Like,
yeah, no. worth however much somebody's willing to pay for it.
That's right.
But which
is crazy.
What Gronk put up an NFT of the Patriots win, you know, championship Super Bowl wins, and I think Mahomes got like $4 million the other day for his moments. So I don't know. It's a wild, wild west right now of it. I don't really get it. But I think the sneaker component of that is going to be around the corner pretty soon, because sneakers in a lot of ways have like set the foundation for how cards and any collectible different genre of thing is launched. And it's only right that they
absolutely.
Well, they have the micro ownership too. So, you know, for high price sneakers, you can own a part of them as like an investment piece almost with some of them now. That's coming too. It's kind of weird, but I don't know. Hey, if you can make more money, if they're going to gain value, some of these things, it makes sense. You know, if you're not going to wear them, you might as well have them gain value, and then you could buy stuff you will wear, right?
I guess. I still can't go for the non-tangible ownership element,
you're veering towards old man on the porch.
Speaking of wearing kicks, what are you guys wearing right now? You want to show off what you got rocking underneath the camera?
I already got my 15 minutes of stretching today, so maybe
throw them up there. Ian. Throw them up there. Yeah,
summertime in Austin apparently.
I had some North Face slides my girlfriend got me for Christmas, because she was over my Yeezy slides that my old intern Mike gave me. But other than that,
those are off limits now.
Well, I mean, they have holes in the bottom, so there's probably something there. But when I coach, I'm coaching kids basketball today, and I tried to make a statement last practice by showing up in the Concords. Little did I know it was going to be 100 degrees in this church gym. I would be sweating so much that the kid who was hooping in 350s asked if I went swimming. And I don't know with kids today what jokes you can make about people's moms or whatnot. So
I had to fire something back.
I had to beat them in a shootout to like feel like a man again. But I won't be wearing the Concords because I sweat so much. The mesh was yellow. I gotta like oxy clean them, but wow. I will. Last night I hooped in a Kobe 6 ID, so that was nice. Good. Some old pairs of 10. So
I've got the Solar Soft.
There they are.
One of the best slides of all time. I've had these for probably 7 years. They're incredible.
I'm adding it to my eBay watch list.
I want to switch gears with you guys for a minute. And I want to talk about kind of getting out of basketball shoes for a minute. How did you guys turn? I'm sorry, I missed it.
What else is there? He said.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, it stays in the same space. But how did you guys turn something that most consider a hobby into your job, Nick? I've heard you talk about it in the past in some of your podcasts that you've done, and just kind of the grind that you had in college, where you were taking meetings with anybody that would take meetings with you, and you were never asking really for a job, but just more trying to make connections. And I think that people look at you guys now and are envious of the positions that you hold and the context that you have and what you guys get to do for a living. And I just wanted you to kind of speak on any kind of advice maybe that you would have, or kind of how you cracked through or broke through in the industry, some of your favorite memories, just kind of almost your origin story on how you got started and how you got to where you are now. And I'll throw it to Nick first.
You want all the LinkedIn bullet points. All right. So it's funny I have a Slam hoodie on, because that was always my goal, right? So I wanted to always write for Slam. And I was in middle school when the first issue of Kicks came out. So that was like the light bulb moment of like, wow, like maybe I could actually write about basketball and, you know, shoes at one time, you know. And I think at that point, everybody, I don't know when Ian had this moment, but I was doing a panel once and they asked, like, when did you realize you weren't going to be in the NBA? Which was such a like funny question, because every kid like thinks that that's obviously going to happen. And freshman year, I got dunked on, and it was the first time in Sacramento Bee history that the dunk of the year at the end of the school year was not a varsity dunk. And it was actually the dunk of me getting dunked on, which was great. And so when I used to read East Bay and the sports page every morning with my cereal, and then when I read that in the paper my freshman year at the end of the school year, I was like, cool, I'm not making the NBA. That was the exact day I knew. And then I kind of shifted from that moment to like, well, how can I work around the NBA in a sense, since I still really obviously like basketball a lot. And so SLAM was always the goal. So I was taking a bunch of English classes. I was the sports editor of the school paper, and then went to University of Oregon for the journalism program in particular. There was like four things you could like sub major in, and magazine was the one I picked. So I think all the like small steps that you take along the way, like that's the stuff I did. And then I was like big on Nike Talk, and a thing that I did early on that like helped a lot was I would basically create all these threads on Nike Talk, which is kind of like Reddit is pretty comparable, I guess, nowadays in terms of message boards. But I would do like the state of N1, and I would have like this post about who all their players are, what their technologies are, like their recent ad campaigns, and then like lob it up to everybody else, like what could they do better at, what you know, where could they improve. And I would basically rotate that from like all the different brands, and that's what first like got the attention of people that worked at the brands, and then also the two guys at Soul Collector, Steve and Alex. And so that was like the starting point. And then because I was in Eugene, I basically would skip any class, anything going on, and just drive 2 hours up to Portland to try to meet with people whenever I could. And so those were kind of like the starting points and the stepping stones to like meeting those guys. And then I was pitching Alex for like a year and a half, all kinds of terrible story ideas that he shot down. He probably shot down like 6 or 7 ideas in a row. And then they had a section called Focus Shop, which was obviously a boutique. Focus Collector, which was a guy that had a lot of Jordans at the time. And then I pitched this section called Focus Artist, which was like a profile of an aspiring shoe designer. And he was like, oh, that's interesting. Like, sure. So my first story was 3 pages on this guy, Justin Taylor, who was living at his mom's house in Arkansas. And he was this incredible, like, 25-year-old designer that was trying to get discovered or found. And the design director, N1, saw the magazine, gave him a call, and hired him on the spot. And then I think a year to the day, he got hired at Jordan Brand, and he was at Jordan for like 12 years doing, you know, CP and Mellow, a bunch of stuff. Nice. And so that article became the starting point for JT, and then also became like a recurring thing that I would do every magazine. That's and that was my junior year in college still, when I had my first story. So that was kind of like the starting point. And then they kind of just would give me another story here or there, and it kind of just built off from that.
That's You're awesome. Welcome for that SLAM hoodie, by the way. I hooked them up with your address to get you a package.
And I need, this is actually like the very first one they did with the like respect the game and
yeah.
like all the like, it's like got all the, what Crackle. Do you even call it? Like the knit, like the lint balls, and like the lettering is all shiny. Yeah. And like not even properly like, I don't know, picked out. So it's a disaster of a hoodie at this point, but I need a new one for sure.
Nice.
Ian, what have been some of your favorite moments working in the sneaker game? I know that the first time that I ever talked to you, I was with your cousin playing golf, and he was like, yeah, my cousin's Ian Stonebrook. And I'm like, the dude from Nice Kicks? And he was like, yeah. I'm like, get the hell out of here. And he was like, no, he's like, let's call him. He's like, let's call him. He'll love you. He'll love all about 99. 99 wasn't shit at that point, too. And I'm like, are you sure? Like, I don't want to just call this dude out of the blue. Like, but he had been drinking, obviously. So we gave you a call, and you were super nice, super great on the phone. And we talked for maybe 5 minutes, just real brief, and wanted to connect later. But I'll never forget it, because you were at the Cactus Jack Jordan 4 Travis Scott party, launch party in Houston, I think it was, when we were on the phone. And we got off the phone, and I'm sitting up there at Helfrich Golf Course drinking beer with some buddies, and you're on the other line, like in Houston with Travis Scott. I thought that was funny.
Well, you know, it's funny because that was probably my realizing I wasn't going to play in the NBA moment, because when we were driving out there, it was I think I rode up there with Darren, either Darren Griffin or Gabe Ocean. They were both out there. I'm just trying to remember who I carpooled with. I always have, and I mean, shoot, this was only like 4 years ago, but like this grandiose idea that it's like, oh, it's like a pickup run or a basketball game. Like, I'm going to get to play. And for sure not the case. Like, it's all like Houston's top pro-am players. I mean, some guys who I later saw, you know, playing in our buddy George Keel's, you know, colon cancer, you know, kick and roll tournament. And yeah, so that was a pretty cool event. That was pretty funny. But, you know, I always think to, you know, probably the ones that stick out the most ironically are kind of the first and the last. The last being when Nick and I were both out in Paris for Jordan Brand's Fashion Week. I wouldn't really say Fashion Week presentation, but just kind of like the Quad 54, the house where they're showing stuff. I mean, seeing Michael Jordan in person, like, nobody's ever had that effect on me. And, like, candidly, you know, like, I look up to Jason Williams more than I look up to Michael Jordan. But seeing Michael Jordan in person, like, I smiled so hard I almost cried. It was
I was right next to you, and it was, like, awkward how giddy you were.
I literally looked like, you know, some kids who just saw, like, you know, BTS or, you know, like, whoever, you know, the people or whatever, like, you know, I mean, I wasn't hysterical, but it was weird. You know, I've had a variety of weird feelings in my life. That one still sticks out as unique.
He's sweating through his shoes.
You guys would see the similar reaction if Steve Alford walked through the door right past me right now.
No, I believe it. And then the first one that was, I mean, I'd been on some Foot Locker trips that were kind of more like, you know, hey, Foot Locker's getting retros, like being in a media room and like getting to know like Joe from Complex better and, you know, some of the other guys, that are, you know, Premium Pete. But the one that was like actually like a full-fledged media trip was, I guess would have been Adidas Crazy Light 2. That's where I met Nick. You know, we played ball with Gus Johnson officiating. Sadly, there's footage of it somewhere. It's I can attest Nick and I are both better basketball players now than that. Although Nick played well.
Oh,
Nick
that was my prime. Yeah, I mean, but if you go on YouTube, I think if you type in either Adidas Media Run or Crazy Light Media Run, something like that, or maybe it's Media Mixtape, there's like a 4-minute video of that, and it's just Ian and I bricking and everybody sucking for the most part. But noted. That's also what every media run looks like. So it is pretty realistic in that sense. But
yeah, it's funny. I was on the Clubhouse, which I don't know if that's ever going to happen again for me, but I was on a Clubhouse for Soul Savvy, and we were talking about NFTs, and Jock was on it. And obviously it's kind of tough to like speak on some of those things, you know, and stuff like that. One, because I don't know a lot about that, but I was like, gonna say, man, if I can get the digital highlight of Jock ripping me at half court and, you know, destroy that, I'll pay good money for that.
Big money he
picked my pocket early and often. But yeah, those media trips, just to be, you know, involved with the game you love, which is basketball, you know, meet people like, you know, when I met Nick, like, you know, he talks about the Nike Talk stuff and, you know, gives it reverence and glosses over, but like, I don't think people realize how much stuff Nick wrote for free on Nike Talk just because he loved it. And like, for me, kind of being a high school kid then who was, you know, still very much into sneakers, you know, basketball wasn't going to be in my life in a team perspective just because we had a lot of kids who were way better than me. And even like socially, you know, in high school, your friends get into different stuff and you kind of have those dry spells where you maybe don't have as many buddies as you want. Lunch did, or your friend group transitions for various reasons. It was like, you know, Nike Talk was a lot of Friday and Saturday nights, you know, and probably kept me from getting into some stuff I shouldn't have got into, which is good, or later got into and, you know, had those learning experiences in college or adulthood, or still am. But yeah, you know, a lot of it was, you know, just to be able to meet Nick, to meet Russ, you know, I'm blank, you know, to be coming in after George, who just off, even though Nice Kicks was a fairly young company, so being a young guy, there was maybe, I don't know, maybe some animosity or whatever. Like, you know, being the new guy is always weird, but it's like, oh, you work under George? Like, everybody loved George, so I just kind of got the blessing of that. So, you know, the friendships I made, you know, was great. And anytime I got to play basketball, that was just good too.
Meyer, before you transition us into the college basketball part, I just want to say, I want to hit on something that Ian talked about in the culture. The culture always amazes me. because I feel like we, as 99, have found our niche within the basketball culture. And you guys, I just want to say thank you to both of you, because you guys have been a part of that, and you have connected me to so many different people that otherwise I wouldn't have connected to, or it would have took me much longer to connect to, and us as a brand to connect to. And I feel like that culture thing is so tight knit that everybody kind of looks out for each other, takes care of each other. And once you kind of get in, this spider web of connectivity just kind of takes place. And as long as you're a good dude, like you get connected to a lot of people where you're like, wow, I'm sitting here talking to so-and-so. Like I did not see that happening. And a lot of that had to do with you guys. So I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for the connections. Since we all met, and really appreciate it, and I'm always blown away by just how much the culture takes care of one another.
Well, I always joke, that's my favorite part about sneakers. Like, I've been to China and met like some guys over there, and we don't have a lot in common, but all of a sudden, like, we realize we have the same shoes in common that we love, or, you know, you have all these people from different backgrounds that you interact with and meet. And I remember when I was telling my mom, I guess this was like early 2015, that I was going to be going to Nice Kicks at that point. She was like, isn't that like the rival, like your competitor? And I was like, no, it's sneakers. Like, those guys are cool too. Like, those are my, like, I was like, I love those guys, you know? Yeah. And it was always funny, because there's probably only one site that ever looked at everybody else as like a competitor and like kind of like kept their distance a little bit. And I think everybody else was just like, I love sneakers. I love reading about stuff. So I want you to be doing great stuff. Like, I always would tease Ian, because I was like, you know, he was always my favorite writer to check stuff out, because I want to read and like check out these awesome features. And so it was like, it was great when Nice Kicks had awesome stuff going on, or had a cool video with George, or sneak peek, or, you know, one of Ian's features, you know. So I never looked at it like it was us against them, or it's just like kind of a rivalry, because that was always the joke, I think, at the end of the day too. It's like, we're literally just writing about basketball and sneakers.
Yeah, right. It's sort of the rising tide lifts all boats too, right? Just like pump up the culture.
Yeah, like it's everybody, you know, it's like a win-win for everybody when people are doing awesome stuff. And so, like, I always thought that was funny, because I forget. So, like, Complex bought Soul Collector in 2013. And I forget if I was, like, tweeting out articles from Sneaker Freaker or Nice Kicks or, you know, some of the other people or whatever. And you're like, hey, like, you probably shouldn't do that anymore. Like, you're sending traffic to the competitors. I was like, that was a cool fucking story. Like, yeah. I don't care. Right. Like,
people are going to find it anyways.
Yeah.
Very literal cool story, bro. Yeah. I appreciate that, Josh. And like I said, you know, Ty is the reason I got into sneakers, you know, and, like, Ty and my friend Tony, and a lot of it was like, Ty was 4 years older than me, so like every year was like, I get the starter jacket, he got a year prior. Like, it was always me fighting to keep up and stuff, and like Tony's family was from New York, and he was just naturally cooler and better at sports than me, so I had to know everything to like have a chance. And then it's like, yeah, you know, Matt and Allison Hatfield gave me the opportunity at Nice Kicks, you know. I always read Nick's stuff growing up, then suddenly being friends with him in the space and being like, damn, Nick did a good job. And it's like, oh, fuck, like, he's better at that thing than me. Like, I got to get better at this. Or, like, you know, we all have our own lanes and spaces. And, shoot, you know, like, thanks to Aaron, the podcast you did, I'm blanking on his name, but the one who did the USA basketball camp in Vegas.
Yeah, Jared Truby, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's my new dream. I didn't know that existed. Like, I'm literally like, man, if I can, you know, spend a week, you know, having, oh, I don't even know, you know, other than Popovich and, you know, Coach K, who all's on, you know, if I can ask, you know, Rick Carlisle, you know, oh, hey, how'd you guard Michael Jordan when you were at Virginia? You know, I'm going to, in a pickup game, obviously not be guarding Michael Jordan, but be guarding somebody a hell of a lot athletic than me. Like, that's awesome. You know, I mean, that means the opportunities and the, really the new dreams that keep you young. You know, it's pretty cool how really everybody gets along. And to be truthful, if they don't get along, like, they're probably just a dick and not really somebody you want to be with. You know what I mean? Yeah, we all have our flaws and our bad moments, and I'm not perfect. I don't bat 1,000, but, like, generally speaking, like you said, the culture is cool, because if they know you're in it because you love it, not because you're trying to make a buck off somebody, or it's not like a total ego thing, like, yeah, like Nick said, like, yeah, I'm always ready to talk about basketball. You know, no brief is needed. It's here.
Let me know when we're all going to that USA camp, because my ass got to get out there and get some run in. I'm 40 plus now, man. I'm 40 plus. It doesn't come as easy as it once did.
You're coming in your prime, man. That's it. You got at least till 50. You're good.
If I stood up right now, you would clearly see that I'm not in my prime.
I've played pickup ball 3 times last year, one of which was in Austin, so pretty rough right now.
You guys got to get back into it. I've been going shirts and skins every week. I got it tomorrow night.
So Meyer plays in a pickup game in his hometown that is legit shirts and skins, and it's all like old men, but it's shirts and skins.
They will not let you play. You cannot play if you will not go skins. So you're just out. No, nothing. It's unbelievable. I was like trying to throw a fit at first. They're like, well, then you can just find a different game. I was like, all right. I guess this is how it is.
They take their shirts and skins seriously. Jasper, Indiana.
Yeah. that's how my game at St. Austin's Church where I go is. And it's funny playing with the older guys. I mean, one, you know, you've got a friend who's there Snapchat and you see yourself without a shirt on. You're like, yes. Man, I need to get some sun. Maybe I need to shave my chest. Get cut up. But the flip side, too, you're playing with older guys. So in your head, you're like, oh, man, I'm
in good shape. Yeah.
Man, now I play
It's the same old guys that are at the Y that just walk around butt naked in the locker rooms with no shame in their game.
Yeah. See, it backfired. I was at my brother's bachelor party weekend in Lake Tahoe, and that was the last time I did shirts and skins. And all those cats do CrossFit like 5 days a week.
Yeah, exactly. You're out there shooting like, please be on shirts.
Yeah.
It's sloppy. It was a tough time.
Got to hit that first free throw, then you get to be shirts. That's the golden ticket.
I was like realistically the best I've played in probably 3 years out of nowhere, and I had like some running shoes on too, but with the skins – experience is not for me.
No, same.
All right, let's get into college basketball, because I actually think that college basketball sneakers don't get as much love. There's so much focus on the NBA and what the NBA guys are wearing, but there's been a lot of history of just sneakers in college basketball kind of having their moment. So I'm kind of curious. I'll throw it to you, Nick, first. What's the first pair of shoes that comes to mind when we start talking about college basketball? Is there a player or a team or what comes to your mind?
This is probably an obscure pick, but I don't know why I always think of the Air Adjust Force. Because I think of college, I think of like, what's Nike's team shoe? And then every college is a progression of that.
Yeah.
And obviously you have shoes like the Dunks and like things that were, you know, more probably, I think, first to come to mind in that regard. But the Air Adjust Force, and just the way that every school wore the white, black, or the black, white, and the colorways were so basic, but then they just had the strap on there. I always thought that was the coolest thing. I wanted the Air Adjust Force. Instead, I got the Air Pummel Force for $40, which was like the budget version with no airbag in the heel.
And yep, I remember those.
My mom and dad went to Boston for a vacation, and my mom got me the Navy strap, which was like $10.
Nice.
She didn't know that the pummel force don't actually have like that midfoot gap for the
right,
strap.
Right, then fit.
On the bottom.
Oh, no.
Like hanging off underneath. But I always thought that like they should bring back the Adjust Force, obviously in like a modernized way, and like that concept was really cool with the strap. Yeah. I think there'd be a cool spin that now. And then so that's from like a team shoe perspective. And then otherwise, like the Arizona team from 97 and or I guess 98, and then it's such a weird shoe that was so tied to college basketball, but they had that Bracketville ad campaign at the time.
So no,
yeah.
The flight determination, like when you think of shoes, like there was no NBA player really associated with that shoe. Like Penny and some other guys wore them, but like I think of like Jay Will at Duke and like
absolutely fresh kicks, guys. Pick daily on the ad, and mm-hmm. Coach K's putting them in a basket like strawberries. And yeah, that was like dope.
I forget if it was Steve Blake, but somebody from Maryland hit like some big free throws in that shoe. Like that's a shoe that like nobody outside of our world probably really even remembers or recognizes. But like to me, that's a shoe that was super tied to college basketball that I always think of.
I like that.
So when we put together our concept for Hardwood Heaven, which this whole pod and everything we're doing is tied into that, Bracketville was basically our inspiration, you know, kind of spilling it here. But it was like when we first started talking about it, I went and got all of the links off of YouTube for the Bracketville commercials and sent all of it to our group and just said, like, this is basically what we need to create in our own way, because I always thought that was so dope. And I actually have I actually have the newspaper, the Brackettville Gazette, hanging up in a frame over in the other room still. And then I have a Jim Boeheim autographed mayor of Brackettville poster behind some posters over there somewhere too. So I was like, I still search Nike Brackettville on eBay like once a week just to see what pops up and what I can grab next. So yeah, I was obsessed with that campaign.
Yeah, it was probably too good of a campaign for what the shoe was. Like, they would have been better off saving that for 2 years for the Huarache 2K4 or something.
Kidding.
Yeah, right.
That could have been amazing, but true. That's the shoe I always think of. And then I think you fast forward to, like, the Hyperdunk. And then I was just joking in a group chat the other day, like, because so far to me, this March Madness has been super boring from a sneaker standpoint. And I was just like, man, what was the last March Madness that had, like, an exciting sneaker or like player that had an exciting sneaker? Like,
yeah,
it's kind of been a while. Like, it hasn't really been that exciting lately to me.
Ian, you just wrote us a bunch of blogs on the greatest sneakers of March Madness past. To answer Nick's question, do you have one that stands out? What do you think the last one was, or a super important sneaker of March Madness past?
You know, I mean, to be honest, Nick's answers were 100% in line with me. I thought he might say the Foamposite one and, like, you know, 97 yeah. Arizona. And then I was going to offer, you know, the Adjust Force, because I think of, like, the six starter Carolina team. So I'm obviously right there with him on that. I mean, clearly, you know, Fab Five with the Huarache and the Barclays are right there. Brackettville, that was a hell of a pull. I forgot all about that. But,
it wasn't that memorable, but yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know. You know, I think about when I was in college, even though it was less due to college players wearing them, because I was finally at least their peer from an age standpoint. I sure as hell wasn't as a player. I love the Huarache 64 and the Zoom BB too. You know, those shoes, you know, my best friend, Andy McKerney, who was just in town, we'd go to the Nike outlet in Howell and get every pair of Huarache 64s that we could on sale to play in. You know, we'd write on them like the you know, Kevin Garnett used to do. I know Jordan Hauenstein, you know, a buddy of ours, he used to play in them all the time too. But yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing, how it's you know, obviously you know, Nike still, you know, bats pretty darn good in terms of marketing, but I never understood why, like, Ja Morant wasn't the college face of the Zoom the Adapt BB, you know, like,
yeah.
He was clearly the most, like, electric, you know, like, no pun intended, player in the game then, him and Zion. I think them wearing that would have been great. What I actually think was probably the last time a shoe was tied to the college game first and made a big impact was actually the Adidas Crazy Light, just because when, you know, they had Baylor rocking the neon yellow pairs and stuff like that.
Definitely.
Even though, you know, the irony is I don't remember if Perry Jones was there, you know, be like, I can't tell you a player who was there.
He was, yeah.
But I know that, you know, when Nick and I were at the events, you know, the Adidas execs would be telling us that, like, yo, we're actually, you know, listening to the young players and the kids, and they want bright stuff. They want to stand out. And they did it. And, you know, clearly now that's the norm. So, you know, you probably would stand out more by wearing – all black or all white shoes or having a really good team shoe. I mean, I think to Nick's point, you know, if they brought back the Adjust Force, especially with the energy of the Dunk and the lifestyle market, I think there's some cachet.
I like
But yeah, it's been a while. Other than maybe like the Cradle Rock was like a weird shoe that Steve Nash wore, that Langston Galloway just broke out, that it felt like you had to play college basketball to actually be able to get them. Like, I don't remember seeing them in stores like that. So
yeah, it's short, like, that was a Luke Ridnour exclusive and nothing more than that.
Yeah. So do you think we'll ever have another Arizona 97 moment? And I mean, what are we missing? Cause they got those ahead of, you know, those were unreleased right at the time. So I'm just curious, like, do you think that shoe companies just aren't as into it, or maybe that'll come up again?
I mean, you had, like, there was a different guy wearing an awesome shoe. So, like, Michael Dickerson had the Zoom Flight 5s on.
Yeah.
Miles Simon had the Tempos, you know, Tempo 3s. You had guys in Jordan 13s. And then, like, I think A.J. Bramlett or whoever it was had, like, some Aggress Force or whatever the Battle Force was at that time. So, you had like a different guy representing all these different silhouettes. And I don't know if we'll see that again, because it would take for Nike to have that many great silhouettes at one time too, which isn't always the case. But, you know, you've got like Michigan State and Duke and all these teams that get a PE of every current signature shoe. And even then, like, they're sometimes a little tame on the colors and don't really stand out the way that all those Arizona shoes like stood out in a different way. So it's kind of hard to say. I mean, I'm hoping so. And I'm watching like Oregon and some of these teams now that still have like exciting uniforms, but sometimes their shoes just kind of like flow in with that and don't really stand out on their own.
Yeah, I think Nick's absolutely right. I mean, I think some of it, I think to a degree it does happen, like with a Michigan State or a Duke where you have, you know, school PEs for LeBron, PG, you know, previously Kobe, Kyrie, Kevin Durant. But it falls a little flat because it's pretty cookie cutter in terms of all being the same colorway, where like the Arizona stuff like didn't match, but it didn't match the level of like, I mean, I guess when Ricky Moore wore like the gold flight posits, like that was pretty out of there, but it was still kind of just slightly left of center. But yeah, and I think the other thing too is like, obviously everybody's so much smarter now where like, you know, Zion got a Zoom Adapt BBP, which was like, you really had to zoom in to know it. But like the flip side is if say, you know, hey, let's say, you know, the kid, I'm blanking on his name, the young kid from Ypsilanti, you know, ends up going to Michigan State and playing there.
Monty Bates.
Monty Bates.
Yeah, exactly. If Nike gives a Monty Bates, you know, a P.E. LeBron, you know, that is very specialized to him, you know, or if he, you know, he debuts, you know, whatever the next, you know, Hyper Dunk, Karachi, you know, like Blue Sky shoe is or whatever, people are going to feel like he was exploited, you know, and like, which is kind of a fair thing to think, or people will start, you know, considering, you know, what's Nike doing or who has a role in this. The odd irony too is like everybody's going to see the shoe and think it's cool. So like it's going to be maybe more effective than like, you know, Bibby, you know, rocking the foam posits before he was quote unquote supposed to. But yeah, I don't know. Or, you know, the same too, you know, if, you know, the NCAA rules loosen up or change and kids can have sneaker deals in college or some sort of, I don't know. Yeah. But I guess the short answer is no.
They're not changing that.
But I will say this. I do think like for somebody that's 10 to 15 years younger than us, they probably look at an early 2010s Kentucky team the way we do late 90s Arizona or UConn.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's always interesting to get age perspective on that stuff too, because I mean, you guys are younger than the two of us, so we have a little bit different of opinions on some of the things and different memories and stuff too. But you know, there's also people that are out there that are younger than you guys that are really into this stuff too, and to kind of get their perspective. Like I always take what I'm thinking with a grain of salt, because I'm like, well, maybe it's just because I'm getting old. You know what I mean? Like, that's the harsh reality. So, again, I want to thank you guys for joining us. I have one more question to kind of tie this all in a bow here. And again, our theme is Hardwood Heaven, and we have that launching on April 1st, 99.com. And basically what we did when in our concept of Hardwood Heaven is we just created our basketball utopia. So we wanted to tell some of the greatest stories of college basketball past, tie it to some of the greatest products, the best shorts, T-shirts, commemorative limited edition T-shirts, so on and so forth, of some of the schools that we have licenses with to do their stuff. So we'll be restocking Georgetown 96. We'll be launching in Cincinnati, Illinois, and some new teams and stuff there. So we're going to have a lot of fun with it. And this podcast ties into that. One question we're always asking all of our guests now is the final question about their hardwood heaven and their basketball utopia. If you guys created a basketball utopia in your head or hardwood heaven, and you went to the pearly gates and Dr. James Naismith opens the gates for you to let you in, I know the first thing you two guys are doing is looking down at his feet to see what he's wearing. And so I'll throw it to Nick first on this. When you look down, what shoes do you want? Not what shoes do you think Naismith would be wearing, but in your basketball utopia, everybody is wearing this one pair of basketball shoes, including Dr. Naismith when he opens the door to Hardwood Heaven for you. What is that shoe?
My personal pick would be Zoom Flight 95, but he'd look, like he'd everybody look great would have like Air Force Ones on, maybe, or Jordan Ones. Like, I feel like those are the easy, you know, the easy ones I would pick. I'd probably say the Jordan Ones, and it's funny because Michael said they were devil's colors, so I think that's my answer.
Okay, there you go. I like that. Ian?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take an opposite approach. I think he'd be wearing, like, Jesus sandals because that's just kind of...
Well, we know
he's
that.
In bare, he's in bare that. Feet, just like him is. Wearing.
It's your utopia.
You have the Grillmaster ones on.
He'd be wearing those shits that DePaula has on right now.
That's right, the slides.
Now, I hope he has on some pie tops because I'm going to be hungry out there if I'm playing a bunch of basketball. So.
We were trying to get a pizza sponsorship the last time we were on the pod. That's I like right, where you're going
right,
with
that. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. Try that Buffalo Chicken Pizza. Are they still your sponsors? We got to bleep it out.
A-Zip Pizza.
A-Zip, no, they stopped giving us read-ins. I don't know what happened there, but they're still great friends. They're just right upstairs. We get to go eat pizza every day if we want to, so it's all good.
I like that choice.
Yeah, pie tops. And I mean, like, do you think – I remember I had a – my buddy, funny enough, his name is Aaron Hernandez, but different Aaron Hernandez. And he was talking about, if in heaven, like, people can play basketball and just, like by now, like, Abraham Lincoln's just, like, super nice and, like, you know, crossing everybody up with the I had and stuff. I don't know. I'd want to wear something where I could actually guard somebody.
I was going to say, I feel like that's a what-if story that Russ should write for Slam.
Yeah, definitely.
You wrote that what if story about like the NBA having a 4-pointer. I feel like that's the same kind of like lane. That
Hardwood Heaven. Going. Yeah.
If there is a Hardwood Heaven, how nice is Abraham Lincoln right now? That comes straight from Ian Stonebrook.
I'm into it.
He might be like the Kurt Rambis of heaven. You know?
Oh my God.
Well, again, hey, I want to thank you guys again for coming on. We really appreciate you all taking the time. You guys know that both of you are welcome anytime. If you ever need anything from us, you know where I'm at. Text me, call me, whatever you need. So greatly appreciate it, guys.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.